I have also the privilege of introducing Lori. She's from Ohio. She's originally from California. She has 5 years of a recommitted back-to-back abstinence, and she's been around for a while, but I have not heard her story, so this is going to be a treat for me, and I hope that it will be for you as well. So, Lori.
I guess this is on. Good morning, everybody. I am a compulsive eater. My name is Lori R. Hi. I was kind of hoping a lot of people had gone home by now, but guess not. It's okay. Not that I don't love everybody. I do. Well, Deborah beat me to it. I was going to start with the Serenity Prayer. So I'm speaking on the gifts of Sihau, and there are many. There are many, many gifts of Sihau. I'll start with what I was like, and I've got a timer who's going to make sure that I don't spend the whole thing time doing a foodalog here, because I did that once. It was very embarrassing. From the time I can remember, I was food obsessed. Food was everywhere in my house. I'm Italian American, and my mother showed her love for people by cooking. I never had a meal out of a box or frozen or out of a bag or anything until I was probably in seventh grade. And she had seven children. There were seven of us. And there was always a pot of something cooking on the stove in the morning. We're talking big because we had a lot of people in the house. And she was not a very good cook, I didn't think, but a terrific baker. And she loved her white flour, and she loved her sugar, and I love my white flour, and I love my sugar. And it was foisted on me. And it was, if you're good, you eat a lot of food, you're a good girl, and we really appreciate it. At the same time, I was made fun of for how much I ate in my family, and I was made fun of my weight, which started to climb when I was in about second grade, I was seven. I was a normal body weight until then. The very first memory I have of using food to fix my feelings was when I was about five. I may have been four, I may have been six, but I think I was five. And I was out in our front yard, and I was talking to myself, and I was playing with the flowers, and I was just having a nice time. And all of a sudden, I get this feeling that there's something over my shoulder. And I look back, and there was a dog that was as big as I was. And thinking back on it now, my brother had a friend who had a Great Dane, and that must have been who it was. She didn't do anything. She just sat there. But I was so scared. I was like, I thought it was a monster. And I ran screaming into the house to my mother. I think it was my mother. There was somebody in there taking care of me. It was a female. And so I sat down on the couch, and I started crying. And what she did was she brought a one-pound bag of sugary stuff and put it in my lap and left the room. And I remember being puzzled, as I would often be in that family, for years later, being puzzled. But I liked that kind of candy. I liked that kind of sweet stuff. So what I did was I opened it up and I started eating, and I numbed out and I ate the entire bag, a one-pound bag of sugary stuff. I was 5 years old. And I remember the numb, just being numb. And I also remember the person who gave it to me coming back in the room and being shocked. And that was the first time I have memory of using food definitely to fix a feeling. And it did. It knocked me out. So off and on throughout the course of my childhood, I was a practicing compulsive eater. I remember in the summertime, I loved to be active. I loved to be roller skating. I lived in the swimming pool. So I would have my breakfast, and I would go out to the pool. I'd be gone all day, and one of my brothers and sisters would come out and fish me out at night for dinner, and literally. And then I'd come home, and I'd eat a lot of food, but I didn't gain weight because I was so active. And I liked being active. I just enjoyed it. But then I would have periods where something would happen. My brothers and sisters were all much older than me, and I adored them. And they would leave, and I would start eating. When I was practicing my piano, I had piano lessons. When I'd come to a tough spot in a piece, I remember my mom kept a lot of baked goods out on the porch, which was right next to where the piano was in the living room. and I'd come to a tough spot. I'd get up, I'd go out, and I'd have something to eat, bring it back with me. And I'd start from the beginning again. I'd hit the tough spot. I'd go back out, and I'd get the food. So I didn't advance in my piano lessons really quite the way I should have. And my teacher would get so frustrated with me because I'd hit a difficult point in the piece, and she'd go, okay, play that again. She meant this part of it, and I'd go back to the beginning. And she'd go, no, don't do that, but that's what I was used to doing. But then I would have periods of time where I didn't care about excess food. I just, I ate, and I enjoyed my food, and that was it. I was starting to gain weight, as I said, from the time I was about second grade on. I looked at my pictures in grade school. I was up and I was down. I was up, I was down. And the people I got the most flack from were my brothers and sisters and my mother. My mother would give me flack when my brothers and sisters were around because they would say, she's eating too much. She's too fat. She's too this. She's too that. I was controlled as to what colors I could wear, what patterns I could wear because they made me look chunky. They made me look chubby. I was chunky, chubby, and pudgy, but I was not fat. And I kept asking people, am I fat? And they'd say, no, so-and-so's fat. You're just pudgy. So I remember it being, there was this golden mean in my family that you could eat all you wanted and not gain weight. That was a big prize in my family. So my dad, I think, had food problems because my dad, he was a physician, and I was told by his nurses that he used to get on and off his scales four times a day. Four times a day. This is a doctor. And depending on what that was depending on how he would eat at night. My dad also was a very heavy drinker. He drank every night until he passed out, and then he used to get up in the morning and go in and perform surgery. Yep. So he did that for many, many years. His drinking was a source of contention between him and my mother. And he was very encouraging of me to start drinking as young as I possibly could, saying, well, in Italy, children have wine all the time. My mother said, but we have good water here. She doesn't need the wine. So, but my dad liked it. He liked to see me drink. By the time I was 10 years old, I knew how to mix, and I knew the names of four different drinks, and I knew what glasses to serve them in. I couldn't tell you how to do it now, thank God. So anyway, there was this golden mean, like I said, in my family. Eat all you want, not gain weight. I had two siblings that could do that. People in my family have a lot of energy. Very high energy. Two people in particular, they can eat anything they want, as much as they want, and they do not gain weight. And I thought that was how I had to be. That was what I wanted to be. And it puzzled me, because I used to try to eat like them, and I'd gain weight, and then they'd make fun of me. So when I was about 11 or 12, my father said, look, if you want to lose weight, this is what you do. You eat three meals a day, all the good food at the meals you want, nothing in between, and have one dessert a day. I thought, okay, I can do that. And I white-knuckled that for about the next year and a half. I lived from meal to meal. And finally, I discovered this calorie book in my dad's, he had a bunch of medical books in the house. And he told me you could eat as much protein as you wanted, and it would burn up the fat. And so I found the calorie book, and I found the foods that had the most protein in them, and that's what I set out to do. And slowly I started eliminating one food from my diet, and another food, and another food, and another food, until I'd gotten into full-blown anorexia. Nobody was saying anything to me about it in my family until I got to a critical level. And I can remember my dad hitting my dad did not express emotions. He got down on his knees, he hit the counter, and he started crying. And he said, you have got to eat. And he'd take me out of, he would literally pull me out of my seat, a lot of shaming stuff in my family, pull me out of my seat at dinner time and put me physically on the scale, go upstairs, get the scale, and put me on the scale and said, look at how much you weigh. And I was like, so, now I'm not fat anymore. But I wanted to be, this is what I wanted when I was in that state. I wanted everybody to leave me alone. I wanted to eat 500 calories a day, and I wanted to live in my own apartment. So everybody would just leave me alone. That's what I wanted. I ended up in a psychiatric ward at the Cleveland Clinic because I'm actually originally from Ohio, but I lived here for 18 years. Sorry, Chris. I didn't make that clear. So they put me at the clinic on an adult psychiatric ward, and they said, what you need to do is start eating to gain weight. So it took me a couple of weeks, but then they gave me some antidepressants, which gave me an appetite, and I started eating and stealing food off of other people's trays. I couldn't make myself order the stuff. Somebody had said, I think maybe it was one of the speakers this weekend said my eater was broken and there were no spare parts. And that's what happened. I didn't know how to eat anymore. I had no clue. I didn't have people watching everything I ate. My family used to take plates away from me when I was on my seconds and thirds, so they monitored everything. If they hadn't done that, I probably would have been obese as a child. But I didn't know how to eat on my own. So that's what they told me I could do in the hospital. Nobody ever addressed the fact, you know, you have an eating disorder, you have anorexia, this is possibly what we do. But it was a long time ago. It was 40 years ago. And it was Ohio, and it wasn't cutting edge anything. So one of the mental health workers came up to me and said, you know, you've got to stop taking food off of people's trays. People were starting to complain. And I got so embarrassed. I got so ashamed. And so, but that's what I started stealing food when I was a kid. My mother used to hide food from me. And I'd get up on the counter. My sister would say, it's up there. And I'd get up on the counters, and she'd help me, and I'd get it down, and she'd eat food that she was allergic to, physically allergic to, the sweet that she was allergic to, and she'd break out, and I'd just eat the food that I loved, and the two of us were, you know, accomplices. So I was still pretty thin when I got out of the hospital. I weighed like about 90 pounds, but I'd come up about almost 20 from where I was. And I wanted to stay that thin. So I got on and off the scale every day, unbeknownst to me that this is what my father was doing. Nobody told me at that time that's what he did, but that's what I started doing. I'd go down and eat something, I'd weigh myself and go out and exercise. Go down and eat something, weigh myself and exercise. And I was living with my parents. It was a very dysfunctional situation. My doctor said, I'm not going to release you from this hospital until you have another place to live. I was 14 years old. And my sister offered that I could come live with her and her two young children. I was thrilled. I loved and adored this sister, and I loved her babies. And my father said, no, you can't do that. And I said, why not? He slammed his fist down on the table and said, because I won't have any control over you. He got up and he left the room. I said, what does that mean? You know, again, I was like, what is it? What are you talking about? So I ended up going to a boarding school. 500 miles from my home, which I didn't really want to do, but I did it, and I had to pick it. I had to choose it. I had to sit there with this big book in the library of boarding schools, and I picked it according to, I didn't want any more Catholic schools. I've been in Catholic schools for 8 years, and I didn't want much to do with the Catholic religion anymore either. It was very, very, my family is steeped in the Catholic religion, but I didn't want anything to do with it. So I went to this school, and I loved this school, but I was homesick all the time. And we had to eat three times a day at a table with other kids. And I was doing all kinds of strange things with my food to try to not gain weight. I would eat parts of the food and not eat the others. I would eat the toppings off of the desserts, but I wouldn't eat the rest of the desserts. You know, and I would go back to the kitchen, and I asked the fellow who ran the kitchen, I said, well, can I have an extra such and such? And he'd say, sure, you can have an extra such and such. I got to the point where I'd look around and make sure he wasn't there, and I'd take 12 of them. I'd wrap them up. I'd take them back to the dorm room, and I would eat the parts I wanted to eat and throw it out, and then later on I'd go back in the trash and try to get the other parts. So I started eating out of the trash when I was in high school. I started stealing food from my friends. We had locks on the doors, like numbered locks. You'd punch little buttons, and you'd get in. They have numbered locks. And my friends would invite me into their room, and their parents had sent them some food and said, would you like such and such? And I'd say, thank you. And I'd look at them when they were punching the locks, and I'd memorize the numbers and go in and steal food. I still owe amends to people for that. It's down in my eighth step. I haven't gotten to my ninth step with it yet. Moving forward. I gained a normal amount of weight. But my weight went up and down and up and down, because what I would do is I would starve and exercise when I was at boarding school, and all for the prime purpose of going home on my 2 or 3 week vacations and eating as much as I could eat. And I remember one Thanksgiving I was there for 2 weeks, I gained 15 pounds. And I can remember the only thing that fit me were overalls by the end of that vacation, and I remember laying down on the floor on my stomach because I knew it was going to burst if I didn't. And then when it got cleared out to a little bit after a couple of hours, I'd go in and get more food. And I was miserable. I didn't want to do that, but I couldn't stop. And that was how I lived. I managed to pull down honors grades when I was in high school. Don't ask me how I did that one, because I had terrible study habits. I was being made fun of all the time for my eating habits in school, and that was mortifying. I can remember one guy I had a terrible crush on, and he one time took over the head of the table because the teacher that normally had was gone. And I just thought this guy was so cute, and I thought he was so funny, and I really liked him. And he lit into me at that table about how gross it was to sit around me and how awful it was and what a pig I was. And I just wanted the earth to open up, and I wanted to get in. But I couldn't stop doing what I was doing. That wasn't enough for me. Went away to college, and I started gaining weight, more weight than I needed to gain. My senior year, I went and I lived at a resort that my boyfriend's parents owned. And one more time, I used to go back for seconds. Is that 15? Okay, 15 minutes, right? Okay. I used to go back for seconds, and his father used to laugh at me and make fun of me. So one more time, I had people making fun of me for the way I ate, but I kept doing it. And I drank a lot that summer. I'm also a recovering alcoholic, but I didn't know it at the time. Drank a lot when I drank, and when I smoked dope, I ate. And then it was a big cycle. I drank, I smoked dope, I ate, blah, 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 blah. I had a terrible relationship with this really, really sweet man that I had no business being with. He was going through a really hard time in his life. He just lost his sister-in-law after losing his sister 3 years previous in another car crash. And his brother was a vegetable from this car crash. And I was going to save him. And I was going to be the one in his life that you know, came along and made everything better for him. I didn't know what I was doing. I couldn't save myself. It ended up very ugly. I went from there. I went to college right after high school. I didn't want to go to college. Told my father that I wanted to take a year off of school because I worked so hard in school. One more time. You are not taking a year off of school. You are going to college. And I was 18 years old, and I was scared to death of him. And I could have left. I was 18. I was legally an adult. I could have just said, thanks very much, bye. But I went to school, and I proceeded to flunk out. And there I had a card for the dining room, food card for the dining room. We had a deli right across the street. And I lived in a dorm that had a kitchen in it, and you could cook your own food. I took advantage of all three. And I stole people's food. People would make food, and I would go down in the refrigerator, and I would steal it. And I remember one time sitting there with a friend of mine, and he went into the refrigerator to get some food. He was studying at the kitchen table, and we were talking, and he started swearing. He said, somebody's been eating my such and such. And it was me. And he was so furious. There was the problem in the dorm with somebody eating the food. I'm sure I wasn't the only one, but I definitely helped. And I don't know that guy's last name. I don't know where he is. But if I did, I would make face-to-face amends to him for that. Because he trusted me. A lot of people trusted me. So left school after a year. My father said, okay, you're flunking out. I'm not going to pay for this. So I moved out west. I was going to school in Washington, D.C., and I moved out west. And I was really on my own there. You know, I was 19 years old. My parents were 2,000 miles away. And that was a big advantage for me. The further away my family was, the better. I was like the cyclone raging through their lives. I have a very dysfunctional family, but I made it worse. I would come back home, and I would do these compulsive eating binges, and I would get crazy. I would yell. I would scream. I would tell them what I thought of them. I would swear at them. And by the time I was ready to leave, they were, like, ready to help me pack the door and, pack my bags and get out. So I lived out in this area for 15 years back out in Idaho. And it was like I loved it. It was a lot of people who drank, a lot of people who used drugs, a lot of people who didn't want to grow up, and that was me. So I was at home. I loved the place. Couldn't hang on to a job. I went through lots and lots of jobs, got a reputation in that town for doing that. My eating was out of control still, but it was okay. Work helped me. Work, because I went to work for 8 hours a day, and at least in those 8 hours, I wasn't, getting food all the time. But I knew I wasn't happy with what I was doing, and I found an advertisement for a sister program in the newspaper one day. I was 21, I think, and I had gotten to the point where I would look in the mirror at my head only. This is why I would look in the mirror, and I wouldn't look at my body. And I would buy clothes from the thrift store because I wouldn't spend money on myself. And And that's what I did. I weighed a lot, and I can remember thinking I weighed a certain point, a certain number, and I got my medical records at some point from the doctor, and I was like 10 or 15 pounds heavier than that. I couldn't face what I was seeing on the scale. So I went to these meetings, and I heard people reading out of the 12 and 12, and I heard them talking about the steps, and I heard that there was one woman in there who was abstinent. She was beautiful. And she was a normal body weight. She was erudite. She was elegant. And all my friends were people that would, you know, talk about, hey, man, you want to get high? And I wasn't really raised like that, but that's where I had gotten. Those were the kind of people I wanted in my life. People who were in motorcycle gangs and people who were in and out of jail. And those were my friends. God bless them. A lot of them ended up in AA with me. So I went to this program, and my eating got better for about 7 months. But there you could choose your own abstinence. And I got a sponsor, and my first sponsor had a problem with cocaine, so he couldn't really be around me, abstinent too much. And my second sponsor was this beautiful woman who I just really, really regarded. And she would tell me, why don't you try eating this, this, and this just 3 times a day? And I did. But I still wasn't sure about this program. It was kind of like, it was kind of weird, And I'd missed meetings, and I wasn't sure. I went back that summer for my sister's wedding. My sister's still married. It's been 32 years. And I was doing okay. I walked in the kitchen. My father was sitting at the kitchen table drunk. And I went over to the refrigerator, and my face was in the refrigerator for the next 4 days. I hadn't done that for 7 months since I started going to those meetings. And I was miserable. I was depressed. By the time I got back home to Idaho, I was suicidal. And literally suicidal, because that's where my disease had taken me with the food. So I decided it was time to maybe try with those people in that program we're talking about. And I picked an abstinence plan. We had something called Dignity of Choice. And I picked it. And I weighed and measured my food. And I called it into this woman. And I didn't think I could lose weight. I had dieted and binged and starved and abused laxatives and done everything everybody in this room knows about, except I didn't vomit. But I tried everything else and lots of exercise. I said, that's it. I can't lose weight, but at least I'll stop gaining. And that's what I'll do. Started going to a yoga class. This is before yoga was fashionable. And I'd go to this yoga class every morning because I loved it. I tried all kinds of sports, but I'm not a competitor. And I didn't do well in sports, but yoga was great for me because you didn't compete with anybody. You just competed with yourself. And they had mirrors. The whole room was like 3/4 mirrors, and you had to look at yourself in the mirror, your whole body in a leotard, and for 90 minutes. And I'll tell you, what that did for me was it got me to accept my body the way it was at that moment in time. And I said, I'm never going to lose weight, but at least I'm going to stop gaining. And that was such a gift for me to look at my body. I couldn't blink. I couldn't turn away, because if I did, I'd fall over. And that was the beginning of my learning that if I accepted myself where I was at, that was the beginning of change. So I lost weight. I lost like 40 pounds on this abstinent food plan. And I was shocked. And people were starting to go, you look really good. You look really good. Laura, you're looking great. And blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, thank you. And I don't even remember if I got on a scale at that point in time. But I couldn't wear my clothes anymore. My clothes were falling off of me. And I was working in a restaurant, of course, and because that, previous to the program, that's where I got my free food, my free alcohol, and all my binge buddies and my drinking and using buddies. And I was in heaven. I thought that place was like my family. So I continued to work there, and I was the person who was assigned to make desserts after I got into the program. So I would, after this happened, I would go all week long abstinent. And I would get in there, and I would have the ingredients for the desserts, and I would sit there and do this, take it with a spoon, make sure nobody was looking. And the desserts were supposed to be these pretty things that were mounded up like this. And when I made them, they were kind of like this, because half the ingredients were gone. And my boss couldn't understand it. I said, I don't know. I don't know why I can't make them like Tona made them. She was the last person, and she didn't eat that stuff. She just made the stuff and said, oh, I can't wait to go for my run. And she'd make it, she'd leave. And that was not me. So we couldn't figure it out. So I knew what was going on. And I also worked in a newspaper, and I was working on one of those ancient computers that were, like, huge, and I was doing typesetting. My boss there called me in to her office one day and said, I want you to look at your work. And she had reams of this stuff that had printed out, and I had repeated myself. I had spelling errors. I had left out paragraphs. She said, why does this happen to you sometimes? I've noticed that this really happens to you sometimes on a Monday morning. And I said, I don't know. I don't know what happened, Pam. She said, if you continue this, you're going to be out of a job. So I knew I had to quit making the desserts. So I did that. They got two other compulsive eaters in there, and they did exactly the same thing. And finally, the boss just decided he was not, he took that dessert off the menu, and he had somebody come in and make something different. So I wrote him a letter. I got to write him an amends letter because I was recommended I didn't call him because he had a wife, and I tried reaching him a couple times. So I wrote him an amends letter. I put a $50 check in there. I said, I don't know if this covers the cost of it, but this is what I was doing, and I want to thank you for being such a help to me in my disease and my other times. Sent the letter off, never heard from him again. But I don't care. I did my part. And I can hold my head a little higher because of that. So I got in this program, and after I got out of the kitchen at that restaurant, I was able to get about a year and a half of back-to-back abstinence. And the problem was there was nobody in my program of recovery, because my sponsor had relapsed by this time, that was maintaining. So nobody could tell me how to do maintenance, so I lost too much weight. And I was exercising a lot because that's what you did in that town. You didn't want to sit around and watch TV. You went out and you rode your bike. You hiked in the mountains because it was gorgeous. You rollerbladed. You did yoga. And I had lost too much weight, and people were starting to say, you're too thin. You're getting too thin. And I was so scared to eat what I would need to eat to gain the weight, because right now at this time I was exercising because I wanted to eat all I wanted to eat and be thin. Remember, that was the golden mean in my family. So I liked being that thin, and I wanted to keep that. And I ate three meals a day. They were big meals, but I exercised off what I ate. And it was only like I would have needed to gain 10 pounds, but I was real lean because of working out that much. Anyway, push came to shove. I agreed to go to a treatment center, because I thought that if I ate more to gain weight, I would never stop. That was my experience with eating more and gaining weight, was that once I started, I never stopped. I didn't know you could do it and be okay. So I went to a treatment center, was running the stairs behind people's backs, and went out and got a couple of kind of laxative type things that I wanted to use when we'd go on store trips, and I'd sneak those in. And people would know that I was cheating somehow, but not quite, because I ate what I was supposed to eat, but I wasn't gaining the weight. And I ended up leaving that treatment center against medical advice. Somebody from back in Idaho, my former sponsor who had a lot of money, said, my sister had invited me over to her house for Christmas in Milwaukee, which was, you know, a far cry from California, which is where I was in treatment. And she said, would you like to come to my house for Christmas? And I said, yes. But they didn't think I was ready to leave treatment. I wasn't ready to leave treatment, and I left AMA because I was going to do what I wanted to do. And that was a really bad idea. I got very, very sick. I got very, very crazy. I couldn't make decisions. I went back to my sister's house, and I started binging. And I couldn't decide what I wanted to do. She asked me for Christmas. She didn't ask me to live there. And I couldn't, and that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to live there. So it was very ugly. My next 9 months with the disease was a history of in and out of eating disorder treatment centers, even one eating disorder recovery house that I got kicked out of, taking food out of the trash, hitchhiking back and forth, being put in a mental hospital, blah, 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 blah. Finally made my way back to Idaho in 9 months later, 9 months after I went into that hospital, with a whole lot of weight gain, but crazy. That, you know, the thing I was worried about was the crazy. The weight gain was, you know. And I've met somebody in the last treatment center I was in who turned me on to some spiritual readings. And I started doing that, and I started really getting into God and spirituality. And then I hooked up with some sponsors in my AA program who turned me on to the Big Book. And nobody had ever taken me through the Big Book and the steps. And they said, they didn't say a lot, actually. They would give me directions to do, and they would say, it's very important that you follow directions. For 9 months, I couldn't follow directions. people in treatment centers would give me directions. I couldn't follow them. I wanted to, but I couldn't. And they'd get so angry at me. So these guys, I knew this was it. You know, this was the last. I couldn't. No more treatment centers to go into. I was at my bottom, and these guys said, we're going to give you directions, and you're going to follow them. And I said, yes. And they told me how to do all these different things on a daily basis I won't go into. You know, just like, you know, taking a shower for 15 minutes. You take a cold shower, or you go out running at night for 15 minutes to loosen up that stuff that's in your mind. Because by that time, I wasn't compulsively exercising. I was just eating. And so I got better. Lo and behold, I got better. I had gained back the 40 pounds plus probably another 10 that I had originally lost. And I started slowly losing the weight. I was weighing and measuring my food again. And I was going according to the food plan that I'd been given in treatment because nobody in my group there was weighing and measuring food. And I knew I needed to do that. So I've got 15 minutes left. I'm going to speed this up. Okay. So I spent about the next 9 or 10 years in that sister program. I had a couple of relapses because there was no sponsorship there. I was trying to do this kind of basically by myself, going to lots of AA meetings, and I would also go to my regular meetings. I led some meetings in my food recovery program, but I was complaining all the time, there's no recovery here, there's no recovery here, there's no recovery here. And I was living in Idaho at the time. I got deathly ill with the physical illness that I use a wheelchair for now. And I had 3 years of abstinence at that point, and I lost my abstinence. I was having trouble eating. I was sick to my stomach all the time. Things were coming out the other end of me. I didn't know what was going on. There were no doctors that knew anything about it. That was a time of going back and forth and back and forth with not being able to eat. And then once I could eat, you know, eating kind of binging, even though I kept going to meetings and I kept talking to people in program. And I came down to California because there were doctors here that knew about my illness, and I also knew that OA was strong in California. Here I mentioned in the sister program. But something had happened in the intervening years. It had gotten weak, and I was really upset because I couldn't find what I was looking for. I was willing to move to California for that reason, you know, for the reason of the meetings. And people started talking to me about Howe, and they said, maybe you should go to Howe. But they were nasty about it. They said, maybe you should go to Howe. And I said, maybe I should. So I went to Howe, and it was just Howe at the time. It was not See Howe. And then there was a big kerfuffle with OA saying that if you continue to hand out food plans and tell people how to eat, you can't be part of OA anymore. And a group of people said, okay. And they started to see how. And I finally found sponsors that I could weigh and measure my food with, who demanded that I weigh and measure all my food at all times. I could call my sponsor every single day. And my sponsor said, are you ready to follow directions? I said, I will wear my scale on my head with an Easter bonnet if that's what I have to do. I don't care. I just want somebody to tell me what to do and give me guidance. That's what I was looking for. I was like a kid that had no discipline. So I stayed abstinent for 5 years, weighing and measuring my food at all times, in all ways, and didn't really go to restaurants, didn't need to. And one day, my doctor gave me a medicine that I was allergic to. I didn't know it, he didn't know it, and I went into anaphylactic shock. And from then on, the illness that I had got kicked into high gear. I went to bed, instead of getting in and out, in and out, in and out of bed, I went to bed 20 hours a day. I couldn't make 3 meals a day anymore. I could make 2, and I could eat them. So I went down to 2 meals a day, and they were big. I was combining my meals. I still had a sponsor. I would call it in. I would write it down. I would commit it to her. I couldn't drive myself to meetings anymore. There was no phone bridge at the time. So I worked the program to the best of my ability for a number of years after that. I'd call people up, and they'd say, well, you're not getting to meetings. You're not working a program. I'd say, I can't get to meetings. People would offer to bring me meetings, but I couldn't stay out of bed longer than 15 minutes at a time, so I couldn't do that. My questions consisted of me listening to the Big Book on tape and the 12 and 12 on tape and talking my answers into a microphone, into a tape recorder, and then playing that back. That took a long time. Eventually, I found a homeopath who helped me get better. He helped me get out of bed. And he helped me start to be able to eat food. I was hospitalized twice for underweight, not psychiatric wards of the treatment centers, but they just had to try to get my weight up. And at one point, the doctor said, you should eat sardine white flour because it's going to digest better in your system. And I said, okay, because I couldn't eat the whole grains, and I was dying, literally. So, and I was not trying to lose weight this time. And I was happy with my body where it was, perfectly content with how I was fitting in my clothes, but I was sick. And that's what happens with the illness. Your immune system starts attacking you, and you start getting allergic to everything. So this homeopath started helping me get better, and another doctor I started seeing down here helped me with some herbal supplements. We had to send away to China for them. And they're expensive, and I still take them. But they got me, helped me stay out of bed, and I was able to start getting better. And what's happened in the last 5 years, I had a relapse 5 years and some months ago. A big long meal. It was like it went from luncheon to dinner into the evening. And that my sponsor said, no, you know, you need to gain weight, so that wasn't a slip. And I just said, I don't feel right about this. And she said, well, it wasn't a slip. You need to gain weight. And I said, I don't feel right about my sponsor. So eventually I let go of that dear woman. She was a lovely woman, but I let go of her. And I got another sponsor, and I weighed and measured all my food without exception, and eventually gave up the white flour. And I now have 5 years of back-to-back recommitted abstinence. And it was slow. It was slow gaining the weight back. Because I couldn't, my body wouldn't hold it for a while, but I was able to. And not only that, I had this terrible relationship with my family, just dreadful. We didn't talk to my mother for 15 years. I didn't want anything to do with her. I didn't care if she lived or died. My brothers and sisters, I didn't care about them. My father would call me up every now and then. He was in dementia at this time when I was living in California. I didn't know it because nobody in my family told me because we don't talk about those things in my family. So he would call me up and be very obnoxious and demand that I start calling everybody in the family and demand I start writing to them, and I would hang up the phone on him. I didn't talk to that man for 8 years, and I called him up one night, and he was dying. He was on his deathbed. And I didn't know that because I had not been able to get to my post office box to get the letter that my sister said, you know, your father's dying. We'll pay money for you to come down to Florida, which is where they were. So I called him 6 days before he died, and I said, I just wanted to call, wish you happy Easter. And then I found out about it, and I cried and cried and cried and cried. I talked to him 3 nights later. He slipped into a coma right after I talked to him, and he was gone. So I went back to the funeral in Cleveland, and I looked around at my brothers and sisters, and I looked at my little old mother, who was blind at this time, and she had white hair, and she was tottering, and I said, what am I doing? This is crazy. So I decided to drop my resentments and my rage and my anger at this family, and that would not have happened if I wasn't working a program. But my program told me I couldn't afford resentments. And it also told me the most important place to work this program was with my family. That was the hardest and the most important. So very slowly, I started getting back in touch with my family. I started writing amends letters. And I started coming back to see my mother. I would scrape together money. My sister loaned me some of her retirement money at one point in time to come back and see my mother because that was important to me. And my mom got very, very sick about 3 years ago. She fell, and then we discovered she had aortal stenosis. She was quite old. She was 95. And the doctors were giving her 2 months to live, 2 months to a year and a half. And I had a decision to make. Was I going to go back to Cleveland and stay there and help care for my mother? And because by that time I could actually do things like that, I could actually help care for my mother, I could read again and help the family out, or was I going to stay in California? And it was an agonizing, horrible decision. It took me a year to make it, and I finally made it, and I went back there and I told my sponsor I made a mistake. And she said, you're there now. And she said, try to take advantage and make the most of this. So I spent the next 2.5 years going over there 3 times a day. I got a house on the same street as my mom. I was 1.8 miles away from her. I took the paratransit service in to see her, and I would read to her every time I went to see her. Sometimes I would help her eat. I would give her lots of hugs, lots of kisses, and she could not believe I'd moved back. She couldn't believe it. She said, I've got my child back. And, you know, I got to make more amends to my mother. I'd made some of them to her already, but I got to make more of them, like embarrassing things, like I had stolen a girdle of hers when I was in high school because I was so, my stomach was puffed out so bad from my compulsive eating that I had done that. And I stole food in the house, and I told her these kinds of things, and she said, okay. And I got to be there for the last month of her life. When I was over there almost every day, I don't know where the energy came to do that, but I was. And I got to watch my mother die, which was not fun. My two sisters, who were RNs, came back and ministered to her. And I was told by my one sister that I was the most balancing, stable element in the family at that time. Me, the cyclone. So that's this program. That is having a sponsor that I talk to every day on a daily basis. It's working the tools every day on a daily basis. It's weighing and measuring my food no matter what, no matter where I'm at. I take my food. My mom had a professional chef. She lived for 3 years. But she had a professional chef come in because nothing was too good for my mom at that time. And Dorothy made these fabulous meals, and I would bring my little containers of this and that and the other, and she was like, but Dorothy also has a problem with food. She's admitted that, and she's overweight, but she's not ready to do anything about it. But she would watch me, and she'd say, you know, if I would be as good with my food plan doing what I'm supposed to do, I'd probably look like you. And I didn't say anything to her. I said, anytime you want to know what I do, I'll tell you. So my mother died. She died about a month ago, about 5 weeks ago. And it was very, 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 very hard. But I'll tell you, one of the things I did was I weighed and measured my meal, and I brought my meal to the funeral home because we were going to be there for five hours. And I had sat down, and I ate my little meal, and there was a woman in there who said, you brought your own food? Because they had food at the wake place. And I said, so I haven't even looked at that side of the room because I'm so nervous. I'm really sorry. It's nothing personal. I brought it, and she started talking to me, and she said, you know, I said, well, you know, I do this because I have to stop eating. If I don't do this, I won't stop eating. And she said, that's me. I don't stop eating. And we talked for a little while, and I gave her the website. I gave her my phone number. I never heard from her, but I talked to her about it. She was very, very interested. So that was like my little 12-step at the funeral home. And I've been weighing and measuring all my food in my room. I haven't eaten at the meals here because I don't do that. I'm not comfortable with it. If I go out, I went out to Whole Foods Wednesday night, I got everything that I needed, and I told my roommates, before they were my roommates, I said, I will be hogging the refrigerator, the microwave, and that space, that counter space. Is that going to be a problem for you? And they said, no, we're going to be eating our meals. So they've been really, really good about it, both of them. And I'm thrilled to death to be here. I had help getting here, financial help getting here. Also, one of the things I want to say is I'm a delegate now. Thank you very much. I really, really am grateful to be a delegate. It was not what I would call fun, but it was very interesting, and it was very enlightening, and I felt honored to be part of it. And this was a person who couldn't stay out of bed for longer than 15 minutes, even when I used to get on the phone bridge. Another gift of this fellowship is the phone bridge. The phone bridge is my link to sanity. I love the phone bridge. Yay, phone bridge. We have great meetings on the phone bridge. I am on the phone bridge every single solitary day. I do my three meetings or four meetings a week, my full meetings, where I'll sit down and I won't do anything else except listen to the meeting. And then during the day, I'll probably get on two others while I'm making food and doing stuff like that. I don't work yet. It saves my life. It saves my sanity. It gives me connection. I hung on to it like crazy when my mom was dying. I hang on to it like crazy anyway. More gifts. Let's see. Besides these, peace of mind, not at all times, but sometimes. Maintenance of a normal, healthy body weight. The structure and discipline of a program that tells me exactly what to do on a daily basis. How many minutes do I have? Okay, good. You're probably going to be glad about that. Being able to be with my mom and useful to my family for 2.5 years was so different, and I had closure this time. I didn't have closure with my dad, and I sat with that, and it was hard for me for years. That was very hard. He died 7 years ago. I get to have the acquaintanceship and the fellowship of other people who weigh and measure their food at all times without exception, whose primary purpose is to be abstinent and to help others and to be honest in all areas of their lives. And I didn't have that in my other program. I was like the Lone Ranger, which is why I went to so many meetings of AA. I was trying to get what I needed in AA. There is no see-how where I live. I may be able to start meetings now that, you know, my mom's passed. I'm not sure because I still get pretty tired. But I do also go to my other 12-step programs, which started, AA started not very far from Cleveland, and the great meetings there. But there's other food recovery programs there, and there used to be CHOW, but people started going to these other food recovery programs. So that's about it. I'm really, really grateful, you know, to have been here this week, 5 days. I couldn't afford to do it myself. Somebody called me up a few months ago and said, somebody from the program, and said, are you going to go to the convention? I said, no, I can't afford it. I wasn't a delegate at that time. I don't even think I was an alternate. And then I was here. You know, a couple of months later, she said, well, I'll pay for your time to go to the convention. I'll pay for that, your hotel fare, and the plane fare, and then the World Service is going to, you know, reimburse me for the hotel, and I was able to be here. I didn't think I was going to get to come. So I'm really grateful to have been here. I'm really grateful to have met a lot of new people, and I'm sorry I didn't look at that side of the room when I was talking, but I've never spoken to a group this large. And thanks, everybody, for listening, and that's it.